Well, hello, good morning. It's Abbey 104. It's Sunday morning, and it's time for Folk Tales. And in the studio this morning, I have with me Jane Wood. Jane, good morning.
Good morning.
And Jane, you are the owner of the very famous Oliver's Coffee Shop in Sherborne, aren't
I
you?
I am indeed.
Or Coffee House, I think you call it, don't you?
I call it a coffee house. Yeah. Others call it a coffee shop and or cafe or anything else.
It's not just coffee, obviously.
No, coffee, tea, soft drinks, cider, food, cake, ice cream, all sorts of things.
And that's been your home now for 7 years, isn't it?
Yeah, I took over in December 2011, so I still get asked fairly regularly if I'm the new owner, which I guess I am to some people.
In Sherborne terms, you're relatively
new. Yeah, I am, exactly.
And this is the old premises of, is it Mould and Edwards, isn't it? It dates back for hundreds of years, doesn't it?
Yeah, I believe it was Mould and Edwards for about 100 years before it was Oliver's. I've got pictures from the 1920s showing it as Mould and Edwards. It's been Oliver's since 1986, so it had a fairly long run as a deli and butcher.
Absolutely, and it's full of period charm, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one way of describing it. We've got the old 1920s tiling and the old original teak shop front, so it's fairly historic, I guess, in its own way.
And your other major claim to fame at the moment, of course, is that you are chairman of the Sherborne Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, I've just been appointed about 3 weeks ago, so very new to the role. About to chair my first meeting next week, so really looking forward to getting stuck in, really.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit more at length about what the Chamber does as the interview goes on, but you're excited about that prospect.
Yeah, I am. It's quite a big project, I think. There's quite a lot of work to be done, but I'm starting from a good base, so hopefully I can make a difference.
Definitely. Okay, as we always do, we'll wander through your life, but maybe first take your initial track, and this is Get Lucky by Daft Punk. Why this?
This is a song that just reminds me of a summer about 5 years ago, I guess, when it was on the radio all the time. And it was quite a long, hot summer. It just reminds me of good times, I guess. Just was one of those songs that was on in the car every time I got in the car. And I love it. It's a great summer track.
What better reason? Let's have it.
Like the legend of the phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning.
And Pharrell Williams and Get Lucky from 2013, and a very successful track, sold more than 9.3 million copies.
Wow.
So yeah, absolutely. And that was chosen by my guest in the studio today, and that's Jane Wood of Oliver's, the coffee house, the coffee shop in Sherborne. And Jane, where did it all begin?
my life.
Yes.
I was born in Hermitage, just outside Sherborne. I lived there till I was 3. And then moved to Holstock, so about 20 minutes outside of Yeovil for anyone that ever goes over that way, although technically in Dorset, so I am a Dorset girl at heart. Lived on a farm. We farmed sheep and various other animals occasionally, according to what my dad came home from market with. Sadly, lost my dad when I was 11. So we stayed on the farm until I was about 16, just me and mum. And then it was a bit... out in the wilderness, shall we say, for someone of 16 years old who was just going to college. So we moved into Yeovil at that point. I went to Yeovil College, had a great time, managed to get 4 A-levels somehow, but mostly had an amazing social life and made some great friends.
Let's wander through some of that. And so early life was on a farm then. That must have been pretty idyllic in this part of the world.
Idyllic in a way, massively hard work. I've got a lot of respect for all the farmers out there because I know how hard it is, especially at this time of year where it's light most of the time, which means you're working most of the time. I can smell the hay being cut at the moment, which is great. Luckily, at the time, I didn't have hay fever. Now I have horrendous hay fever. But yeah, I will always be a farmer's daughter. I will always love being out in the countryside. Years of, you know, walking the dogs in the fields and kind of roaming fairly free, I guess.
Great, isn't it?
Certainly was never in front of a TV or an Xbox or any of that stuff. And still to this day, can't really sit still for more than about 5 minutes. I think you're either kind of born into that lifestyle or you're not. And I definitely was. And I guess it's kind of shaped where I am now. The thought of having to go back and work in an office and sit still doesn't really do it for me.
No. School then was local?
Yeah, I went to lots of different schools. I went to Holstock School when it was still there, which really sadly closed when I was about 6. There just weren't enough children in the village, which ironically there are now because they were expanding the village at the time and there's loads of kids there now. I went to Evershot School briefly. I then went to school in Crewkerne. Told you I've been to a lot of schools. I went to a wonderful school in Crewkerne called St Martin's. It was a very, very small school. The plan was to stay there till I was 16. Unfortunately, they shut the senior school while I was there. Had this effect on schools. They mostly closed down. So I had to leave when I was 13 and I was devastated. I think I cried for about 3 days. It was such an amazing school. Still in touch with the teachers and fellow students from school. I went to the Park School in Yeovil for 3 years, which is where I did my GCSEs. I'm actually going this weekend to the Park School reunion. They've just relocated to the old Chilton Cantilow site. So they've invited us all back for one last kind of hurrah at the school, which is going to be really weird. I haven't been back for, 20-odd years. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the school is and see if it's how I remembered it.
So lots of different schools.
Do you
reflect with, some people look back and say, I hated school.
I loved school.
Loved it.
Yeah, pretty much the whole way through. I think I am quite an academic person, so I guess school was never a massive struggle for me. And I was lucky that I went to really good schools. I had excellent teachers and I was always in really small classes. And I didn't really appreciate until I was much older how lucky I was to go to the schools I went to. I kind of realised what the sacrifices that my parents must have made to put me through private school. I'm eternally grateful.
So looking back, though, those were happy days then. And by the sound of it, you were quite academically successful. You say 4 A-levels, which is creditable, definitely.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I did well in all of them, but I passed all of them, which is the main thing.
That's what matters, yes.
And had a great time doing it.
You mentioned briefly there that your father passed away during your childhood.
I was 11 at the time.
That must have been difficult.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think as a child you're quite adaptable, and so you just kind of take whatever comes along, and you don't know, you know, I don't know any difference.
I don't know
what it's like not to go through that. It kind of changed my direction a little bit. I guess we probably would have stayed on the farm a lot longer, but like I say, I don't know any difference. So I've kind of taken the course that's come at me since then, I guess.
Sure. And you did stay on farming though for a while.
We stay there for a couple of years. I guess I can't really remember because it was so long ago. I think we got rid of the livestock fairly early on, but we did stay on the farm because that was home. And we had dogs and cats and the farm was where I'd grown up, and I guess my mum didn't want to take me away from there. She certainly didn't want to leave. We had lots of friends there, everybody knew us. I was at school not that far away. But it did get to a stage where we were kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and it was quite, I think I'd started college by the time we moved, so all my friends were in Yeovil and I wasn't, and obviously I couldn't drive because I was only 16, and I guess the farm was probably, looking back, quite tough for my mum to run on her own because it was quite big. So yeah, I think we kind of up sticks and moved into Yeovil for convenience more than anything, because I could walk to college from there, and that's where all my friends were. So we were kind of on the edge of Yeovil. It was, we could kind of see grass and fields and stuff, so it was all right. It didn't feel too
wasn't
suffocated.
Too much of a culture shock. And looking back at those days, any sense of what you wanted to do after school?
Not really. For a while at school, I wanted to be a teacher. Then I wanted to be a lawyer, but I've got a few lawyers in my family and they kind of talked me out of it. I started, I guess, working in hospitality when I was still at school. I worked at Summer Lodge Hotel in Evershot when I was about 14, 15 as a chambermaid. Probably the hardest job I've ever had. Don't think people realise how hard it is, turning rooms over as quickly as we were. And started working in the Manor Hotel in Yeovil when I was 17. So I was kind of dipping my toe in hospitality without realising that that's where I would end up making my career.
Okay. The time came for you to leave school, obviously, and you had your 4A levels. Had you decided reasonably soon that university was the route to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're quite an academic child, I think you just kind of assume that you will go to university. Everyone kind of just talks to you about, okay, you're going to finish school and you're going to do A-levels and you're going to go to university. There weren't really the opportunities now that there are for apprenticeships, work, that kind of thing. Pretty much everybody from school and college that I knew went to university. That's just kind of the done thing. And I'd always been, maths has always been my strength. So I just kind of kept going and ran with it and went to university to do a statistics degree, which was hard.
Yeah, well, I would think so, yeah. So in choosing that, I mean, statistics is a reasonably narrow field, isn't it?
Yeah.
What made you go in that particular direction?
Well, I originally registered to do a maths degree, and then when I got to university, it turned out that to do maths, you had to do a computing module, and I didn't really like the sound of that. And the only way to get out of it was to switch to a statistics degree where you got to do economics and management alongside your... So the first year was basically a maths degree with a bit of economics. And then over the next couple of years, they introduced, obviously, lots of statistics and management. So it was kind of, for me, it was more interesting than just... I just didn't want to do the IT side of it. Kind of regret that now because probably would have been more useful because I can't do anything with a computer, as those who are listening that have ever had to help me will know, and that's probably most of you. So, yeah, it just the kind of wider base of the statistics degree kind of appealed to me a bit more variety and flexibility. Hmm. So if you'd asked me at school if I was going to do a statistics degree, I would have said absolutely no. I hated that. Still pretty much hate it, but I'm slightly more qualified at it now.
All right, we'll come back and talk a bit more about that.
Sure.
But let's have your second track, which is The Kings of Leon and Use Somebody. Why this? Just another favourite?
Yeah, I just love Kings of Leon. I saw them in Hyde Park probably 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Kind of a bit of a soundtrack to my years in Guildford, I guess, which we'll probably come on to later on.
Yeah.
Just one of those bands that just really caught my attention, kind of stuck with them, saw them live. I think I've seen them live twice, actually. I just like the lyrics to this track.
Okay.
Enjoy.
It's Use Somebody by the Kings of Leon.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see. Painted faces fill the places I can't reach. You know that I can use somebody. You know that I can use somebody. Someone like you and all you know and how you speak. Countless lovers undercover of the street. You know that I can use somebody. You know that I can use somebody. We'll be right back.
Oh, that's the Kings of Leon and Use Somebody from 2008 from Only by the Night album, got to number 2 in the UK. That was chosen by Jane Wood, my guest in the studio this morning. And Jane, we've been talking about life at university in Bath, and you were doing a statistics degree.
I was.
Lucky you.
I know, exactly.
But what about life itself? Because that was, for a lot of people, that sort of, you find yourself at university. Did you find that?
I found the bar. mostly because I was working in it, to be fair. I kind of went through university with a kind of work hard, play hard attitude. So I did work hard. I mean, I got my degree. And Bath was ranked top in the country for maths the year that I graduated. So kind of figured that I didn't do too badly. I worked in the bar at uni, partly to earn money because, you know, broke. And partly because it was a great social life and it kind of felt like you were out with your friends, but you were getting paid for it, which is a win-win. And you don't have a hangover because you're not drinking. So I guess that was all part of my further journey into hospitality at the same time. Again, I wouldn't say I necessarily thought, oh, I want to go and work in hospitality, but the job came up and I thought, yeah, sounds good. And I absolutely loved it, had a whale of a time. I worked pretty much, I quit, I think, my final Christmas because I decided I probably needed to pass my degree, more importantly than anything else at that point. And I was lucky that in my final summer holidays, I got a 2-month placement with HSBC Bank. So my mum had said to me, you really need to get a real job rather than just coming back and working here, there and everywhere. So I applied for an internship with the bank, which I got. So I stayed in Bath the whole of my last summer holidays and worked for 2 months for them, which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the people and the challenge. Working with the public is interesting, shall we say. It's, you never really know what the next person to walk in the door is going to say, and that applies in the job I do so now as well.
Tell me then, you came to work in HSBC. That's on the back of the statistics. That's a difficult word to say.
Yeah, that's why I tell everyone I've got a maths degree.
On the back of the statistics degree, yeah.
Yeah.
And so was that a specialised job within HSBC?
No.
Okay.
I just got onto their graduate management training scheme. So I did the placement at the end of that. They offered me a job, which was great because it meant that my final year at university, I wasn't constantly looking for a job, which is what most people were doing.
What was the job then? It was just a general customer service?
Yeah, so you just kind of, yeah, you go into customer service. Mm. I did cashiering, which I hated, but I had to learn how to do it. Just what they called counselling. So when you go in the bank and you want to open an account or you want to do something on your account or whatever you want to do, open a credit card, take out a loan, all that kind of stuff. I did all of that stuff. But I also learned all the back office operations, cash management, that kind of thing, filling cash machines. I did stints in business banking. I did stints in various different small branches. So I went to Chew Magna, I went to Glastonbury, Warminster. So, and actually it was working in the smaller branches that really gives you the experience of doing everything and anything, because there's maybe only two other members of staff, so you just kind of have to think on your feet and figure out how to do stuff really quickly.
I think most of the ones you mentioned probably aren't there anymore.
Chew Magna's definitely gone. I'm not sure if Glastonbury's still there. Warminster, I think, is still there. Bath is definitely still there. Bath was kind of always my base, and I kind of flitted back in and out of there.
We digress. So did you enjoy that?
I did. The start of it was very much service orientated, and that's always been my kind of thing, is if you provide good customer service, then people will keep coming back. But towards the end, it was getting much more sales orientated, and I'm not a salesperson per se, in that I can't just do a hard sell of anything. Like I say, I'd rather just provide a good service, and then people will go, I went there, it was good, they helped me, I'll come back. And that's kind of how I am now. I don't try and kind of sell my business. I just try and make it a nice place to be so that people want to be there. Slightly different with a bank, I guess, but the same principle, that if you go somewhere and they give you a good service, you're more likely to go back there. But it was becoming quite a hard sell environment, and that wasn't really me.
Okay. So how long did you stay with HSBC?
I did 3 years, almost to the day. And then I decided that being grown up was overrated, so I quit my job and went around the world for a year.
Oh, okay, so a late gap year.
Yeah, it was a bit late, but I think I was 24 when I left, and I think by then, I think had I gone 18, I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much as I did. I wouldn't have been as brave. I wouldn't have had as much money. I think doing it a bit later, I actually met quite a lot of other people doing it a similar age to me. And I think it was kind of more of a life experience. I did a lot more than I would have done. I could afford to stay out there a lot longer. Saying that, Australia was much cheaper than it is now.
So tell us about that trip then? You took a bit of planning, presumably, or did you just go and buy a ticket and think, well, I'll just go?
Yeah, I mean, there was an element of planning. There was also an element of, I'm just going to buy a ticket and see what happens. So I just bought a round-the-world ticket. I'm lucky I've got family all around the world. My mum's family have kind of spread to every corner of the globe, which makes for great holidays. So I went to Thailand first, where her cousin was living, stayed with her for a few days, and then she just kind of sent me out on my own to explore, which I did. I loved Thailand. I've been back recently. From there, I went to Australia. Totally fell in love with Australia. If it was nearer, I would happily live there. Travelled all over the place. Lived there. Lived in Bondi for a bit, because where else do you live when you live in Australia and you're travelling? Travelled all around Australia, really. Well, all up the east coast, down to the bottom, over to the left a bit. I didn't really realise when I got to Australia how big it is, and that seems ridiculous, but if you've never been to Australia, it's way bigger than you think it is, and it's kind of 4 hours on a plane to go, what, there's about 2 inches on a map. So absolutely loved Australia. Then went to New Zealand. My mum's brother lives in New Zealand, and I'd never met him, so she came out and met me there. She hadn't seen him for 25 years, so that was pretty cool to be reunited with him.
Did you work your way through this, or was it all
I worked in Australia. Worked in a restaurant, actually. So again, another string to my hospitality bow. Worked for this pretty crazy lady, but she had extremely high standards. So I learned a lot of things, like how to line up glasses on a table, how to line up cutlery on a table, all that kind of stuff that you don't really realise makes a difference, but it does. But yeah, so I worked for about 3 months in Australia, and then that was I basically earned enough there to pay for much of the rest of my trip. Minimum wage in Australia was a lot higher than it was here at that point in time. Did a few weeks in New Zealand, then went to Fiji, which is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And then went to America. My mum's sister lives in Los Angeles, so stayed there for about 6 weeks. Popped up to Vancouver to see some of her cousins. So it was basically a tour of my mum's family, but seeing the world at the same time. So, yeah, was gone for the best part of a year. But I've been home now for about 13 years, which is quite scary because it doesn't feel like that long ago.
Sounds wonderful.
It was amazing. I've been back to Australia a couple of times, been back to New Zealand, been back to America. Been back to Thailand, so I've actually been back to almost everywhere now.
And quite spontaneous by the sound of it. It wasn't.
I think a few of my friends at that point in time were saying, oh, well, yeah, I might go out. One of my friends said he was going to go live in Australia for a year. And by the end of the day in which he told me, two others of us had decided that we were going to go for a bit as well. And actually, my original friend is still out there. He's never come home. So my mum's probably feeling quite relieved that I did come home.
All right. Well, you did eventually arrived back home, clearly. And
just about.
Had you given any thought to what happened next during this long year that you were wandering around?
No, not really. The bank wanted me to go back, pretty much rang me as the wheels hit the tarmac at Heathrow. But I kind of felt that if I went back, it would feel like I'd never been away. And I didn't really want that. And I didn't really want to go back to Bath. I kind of wanted to go somewhere different.
And you hadn't been enjoying the latter parts of it, you say, about the selling.
Yeah, it just wasn't. It wasn't really the job that I'd started. It would have been really easy to go back and just pick up where I'd left off and probably just do it for a few years. But I just kind of, I felt I needed a different challenge, really.
So a fresh start then?
Yeah. Yeah, so I pretty much stuck a pin in a map to decide where to go. I had really good friends living in Alton in Hampshire, and they'd said, come up here for a bit, see if you like it. So I did. And ended up job searching in Guildford because it seemed like quite a big place with quite a few jobs, and it was quite nice. It's kind of quite similar to Bath in a lot of ways, but nearer London, so more expensive.
And what did you end up doing there?
I ended up working for Philips Electronics. So literally just went to an agency, was looking at various jobs, and this job came up, and they said, Philips is a great company to work for. We suggest you go for it. So I did, and I actually didn't get the original job that I'd applied for, got a different job, a better job actually, ironically, working in logistics. So I spent the best part of 4 years moving stuff around, is the easiest way to describe it.
So again, nothing to do with statistical matters?
Not really. A lot to do with numbers, working out how many TVs you can fit on a lorry, working out how many delivery slots you can get into Argos by 7:30 in the morning. Other retailers are available. Learning a lot of model numbers, working out what products go with where. I mean, a lot of numbers, working out sales figures and stuff. I did a lot of demand planning, so having a look and seeing how many toothbrushes John Lewis were going to sell in December in in a promotional month, that kind of thing. So really interesting and an amazing team of people that I work with, still friends with some of them now. It's the only time really that I've worked in a big office, I guess. And the only part I really miss of the corporate days are the kind of camaraderie of working in a big office, lots of people, lots of social lives, lots of birthdays, lots of cakes, lots of spontaneous nights out, lots of big Christmas parties. But I don't miss the really, 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 really long hours. And the recession hit while I was there. And again, it just changed. It wasn't the kind of fun place that it had been. Became a lot of hard work and not enough play for my liking, really.
Living in that part of the world, it's a bit more frantic than Sherborne, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot more traffic. It's a lot noisier. I was lucky, I kind of lived on the northern side of Guildford and I was fairly near the edge, so I could almost see fields from my house, nearly. But it just got to the stage, all my friends were kind of moving home, so everyone that had left when we all went to university, everyone kind of spread all around the country. And everyone was moving home and I was coming home more and more. And not really wanting to leave. My friends were having children and they didn't really know me because I wasn't really here. And that was really sad. And all my family were here. My granny was still alive at that point. And I wanted to be nearer, really. I was just, getting homesick, I guess. And decided that I was going to come home. So that's what I did.
How did you engineer that?
Well, I tried to work from home for Philips. And for various reasons, it took me a really long time to arrange it. And by the time I did, I'd found a job down here, so I moved down here to a job in Castle Carey, which on paper was a really great job, but in practice I absolutely hated it, and I actually quit after 3 months. And my biggest piece of advice to anybody listening to this who's in a job that they hate is to quit and do something different. It was making my life miserable. I hated it.
What sort of job were you doing?
I was working for a pet food company, and it was kind of logistics-ish, planning again, but it just... The job I ended up doing wasn't the job I'd applied for. They'd kind of changed the parameters, but not really told me. Just wasn't working for... The guy I was working for wasn't particularly supportive. I was just working kind of 12 hours a day, getting all sorts of phone calls out of hours. I just wasn't enjoying it. I'd moved home to be in Sherborne, and I wasn't in Sherborne ever because I was always at work. And I just thought, no, there's more to life than this. Some people told me to stick it out. Some people said, if you hate it, quit. So I kind of took a bit of a gamble and just quit. And then went, kind of need to find something to do now.
So how did that work out?
Pretty well, actually. My cousin at the time was running a bar in Yeovil. So I just rang him and went, I kind of need a job. Can you help me out? And for the second time, the first time being when I got home from travelling, he went, yeah, come in on Monday. So helped him run his bar for the best part of a couple of years. Which was great fun, again, great social life, hard work, more hospitality. Just couldn't get away from hospitality. I guess it's the gift that keeps on giving. If you're good at it and you enjoy it, there's always a job in it. So I did that, picked up some bookkeeping work, thought I should put my maths to good use. So I did a little bookkeeping course, learned how to do that. I did some private maths tuition, which was, really good. Really, was when I started to realise how lucky I'd been with my education, when I was teaching kids who hadn't been as lucky with their education, and seeing where actually, I was lucky that I'd had a good education and was good at math. So, and also worked for a small business just outside of Sherborne, doing everything really, management, order processing, marketing, everything. And that's kind of where that combined with the bar was where I really learnt how to run a business, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take your third track, Jack Johnson.
Yeah, this really reminds me of travelling. I think he kind of hit the big time probably in 2005. So for kind of the second half of my travels, he was just on the radio all the time. So every time I hear his music, it just takes me back to beaches and not doing very much.
All right, Jack Johnson, Better Together.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. And our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs with sepia tone loving. Love is the answer, at least for most of the questions of my heart, like why are we here and where do we go and knock on us so hard. And it's not always easy, and sometimes life can be
deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. It's always better when we're together. Yeah, we'll look at them stars when we're together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. Just might find their way into my dreams tonight, but I know that they'll be gone when the morning light sings or brings new things. For tomorrow night you see that they'll be gone too. Too many things I have to do, but if all of these dreams might find their way into my day-to-day scene, I'd be under the impression I was somewhere in between. With only two, just me and you, not so many things we got to do, or places we got to be. We'll sit beneath the mango tree now. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. We're somewhere in between together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. Combination of words I could say, but I will still tell you one thing, we're better together.
Jack Johnson and Better Together from 2009, and chosen by Jane Wood, my guest in the studio, also chosen, Jane, by a certain Rob Brydon when he did Desert Island Discs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good
so
taste.
You're in good company. Anyway, we've been talking about your life and career to date, and we left off, you were working in a bar in Yeovil. With your cousin, was it?
Yeah, with my cousin. Mm-hmm. I was working for him and then doing about 100 other things as well at the same time.
But that was not going to be a long-term prospect?
No, it was kind of got me through a time where I didn't want to be working in corporate anymore, and I didn't really know what to do with my life, if I'm honest. I kind of got to the stage where I knew I wanted to run a business, but I didn't really know what business I wanted to do, and I wasn't particularly qualified. I was doing a bit of accounting, but I wasn't an accountant. I was doing a bit of teaching, but I wasn't a teacher. Didn't have a huge desire to go back into education to learn how to do any of those things to a qualified status. And then someone told me Oliver's was for sale.
Now, this is was at that time and still is a coffee shop or a cafe or however you want to describe it. You've not got a great deal of experience of running that type of business. You've been in hospitality,
really.
You say, but buying it and running it is a different thing altogether, isn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of looking back. It was quite a brave move, I guess. I'd worked in hospitality in bars, I'd worked in hotels, I'd worked in nightclubs, I'd worked in restaurants. But I'd never actually worked in a coffee shop. But I knew it was an established business, I knew it was running really well, I'd seen the accounts, I knew it looked reasonably healthy. And I guess I kind of thought, well, let's give it a shot and see what happens. And that was nearly 7 years. So, yeah, literally 7 years ago now was when I was first looking at it.
Must have been a fairly big decision, though.
Yeah, it was. I was lucky I still had my house in Guildford at the time. So I thought, well, if I sell that, then I can buy this business. It was a big decision. And looking back, I don't really know how I did it. I'm not sure I'd make the same decision again. I'm really glad I did it. I had a couple of friends who were really kind of supportive of me doing it, and saying, you should really do this, we can really see you doing this. And I'm eternally grateful that I listened to both of them. One runs a design agency in Froome and the other is a musician. Both were running their own businesses at the time, and both just kind of kept pushing me and saying, have you done it yet? Have you done it yet? Have you done it yet? And the more people I spoke to, the more people said, we can totally see you doing this. You know, you've got the business knowledge, you've got the hospitality knowledge, just kind of put it together and run with it. So thanks, guys. I'm glad I did it.
All right, so you made that decision, you took the plunge, you bought the business.
Yeah.
And so what happened? I mean, you say it was in good shape, so there wasn't a turnaround exercise to do.
But yeah, it was in really good shape.
Wanted to put your print on it.
Yeah, I did. I took over about a month before Christmas, which, with the benefit of hindsight, was a crazy thing to do. My first day trading on my own was festive shopping day, which is the busiest day of the year in Sherborne. So it was kind of sink or swim, and I had no option but to swim. Luckily, my mum came in with some friends who were really happy about the fact that they had to make their own lunch and then clear up after themselves because I was so busy. Yeah, December is really crazy in hospitality, and I was lucky that I had an amazing team who knew what they were doing because I, to a certain extent, didn't. I worked every day for that first month because that was the best way to learn it, was to immerse myself in it. Again, looking back, I don't really know how I did that.
What were the initial challenges then? What did you find really difficult?
Being on my feet all day, every day. I lost a lot of weight that first month because you don't realise how much you just keep moving. I do all my own accounts, so kind of finding the time to keep on top of the paperwork side of things. It kind of seemed crazy to me to pay someone to do it when actually that's what I'm semi-qualified at doing. And just managing people. Although I'd kind of done it for other people, when you're doing it for yourself, it's quite a challenge. So, you know, when someone rings in sick, you kind of think, oh, well, the only other person that can cover that shift is me. So getting to know all my staff, getting to know their strengths, and where I needed more staff, getting to know who all the suppliers were, making sure that I didn't run out of anything. I was really lucky that there were lots of regular customers who I met really quickly. And they all said to me, please don't change anything. We love it here. But please change the coffee because it's awful.
Oh, okay.
So I was really lucky that really, really early on in the whole process, I met with Charlotte and Giles from Reed's Coffee just down the road. And they were really keen to work with us and have a local coffee shop selling their coffee. So they massively helped me out, taught me how to make coffee properly, told me what kit I needed, and started to supply my coffee really quite early on. Probably I'd only been there about 3 months when I switched to their coffee.
You do use quite a lot of local ingredients. I think your eggs come locally as well.
Yeah, eggs are from Silverthorne Farm in Millbourne Wick. We use as much as we can, so our bacon comes from Parsons, ham comes from Loaders. We use a lot of stuff from Hunt's Food Service. We try and use what we can that's on our doorsteps. We've got Twisted Cider now. All our alcohol comes from Hannah down at Vineyards. I just believe that local food tastes better. And I just think, why pay for food that's coming from anywhere else other than Dorset when we've got such amazing stuff on our doorstep? So I'm really keen to support other local producers, other local businesses. Something like every pound spent in the local economy, about 66 pence of it goes back into the town.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of keen to make Sherborne thrive, and I rely on people supporting me in the same way. So I guess what goes around comes around.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to pay other people when I can pay people that are on my doorstep.
Yeah,
so I've tried to kind of maintain that ethos. To be fair, everything was pretty local when I took it over, even more so now.
So it was evolution and not revolution.
Exactly.
Have you changed very much since you've been there?
No, not really. People come in and go, I haven't been here for 20 years and it's still exactly the same. And that's kind of how I want it. There's no point in changing if people like it for what it is. And they come back and they say, oh, you know, I used to come in here when I was at school and drink milkshakes. And I'm like, you can literally have the exact same milkshake that we had then. And people like that kind of nostalgia. They like coming in and going, gosh, it's exactly how I remember it. And, you know, don't ever change. We like it how it is. And there's all different coffee shops. And if you want something different, then there's other places that will serve that.
I was going to ask you, I mean, Sherborne is famously not short of a coffee shop or two.
Yeah, that's one way of describing it.
What differentiates yours from others?
I think the local thing. We've been there a long time. People know us. People know what to expect when they come in. But I'm more than happy if people come in and they want something that I don't sell, I'll tell them to go to, you know, the Three Wishes, the Pear Tree, Fontana, all those places. There's some great coffee shops. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the other coffee shops in town, well, a couple of them, but on the whole we all do something different, and I think that's why we've all coexisted for so long, because we all have different things that we do well. So we make all our cakes on site, and I think a lot of people still don't realize that. My mum always said, you need to make more of a deal of it. Well, there is a sign when you come in that says that that's what we do, and I'm not going to stand by the door all day telling everyone that walks in, but we make everything, and I think that means we know what goes into stuff. And more importantly, we know what doesn't go into stuff. And I think people know they can come and they go, oh, you know, I really like this, I don't like that, what can I have? Or, you know, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, what have you got? And because we make it there, we can tell them. And we can, you know, we can prepare your lunch without tomatoes or with extra cheese or, you know, all that. So it's all handmade. So I think people like that they know exactly what they're going to get, and they know that they can get something a little bit different if that's what they want.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, and the business is going well. You say you've not changed anything too drastic, and it's a recipe for success. And the success,
yeah, I mean,
is still,
I guess the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No, quite.
And it's ticking along pretty nicely. So it's been hard. There's been some challenges. Obviously, Waitrose turned up on my doorstep giving away coffee, the very product that I try and make a living selling, which was tough at first, if I'm honest. Mm. People wanted to try it out. But ultimately, people come to us because they want to sit and chat and read the paper and catch up with their friends. There's lots of people that come into us on their own for various reasons, and they've made friends, and they know that if they come in at 11 o'clock, they'll see three or four other people that they know. Sure. And it's kind of a social hub, and that's what you don't get in Waitrose. So to me, Waitrose is more of a kind of grab and go on your way back from the school run or whatever. Yeah. But for us, it's more the social aspect of coming and sitting and having a chat with us or other customers or, you know, whoever's passing through. And we do our best to the people that come in, especially those that come in on their own, to make sure that we have a quick chat with them, because it might be that we're the only social interaction they get that day, and we get to know people and where they're from. And, you know, a couple of times we've had to help people out when they've been in trouble. So
Now you've played an increasing role in the town by way of the chamber, and as we alluded to, you've become chair of the chamber recently.
Very recently.
We'll talk about that in a moment. Let's have your penultimate track, and then we'll come back and do the chamber bit, shall we?
Sure.
This is A Sky Full of Stars by Coldplay.
This reminds me of my first Glastonbury experience, which I'm ashamed to say was only 2 years ago, having grown up, what, half an hour away from Glastonbury? I went for the first time 2 years with a group of friends, and Coldplay were headlining, I think, on the Sunday night. And it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And this song kind of brings it all back, really, my first Glastonbury experience.
It takes you back. Okay. Sky Full of Stars. That's Coldplay and A Sky Full of Stars from 2014, the third single from their Ghost Stories album, and chosen, as with all the other music today, by my guest Jane, who's been talking about her life in hospitality and how she came to buy Oliver's the coffee shop. Jane, we've got to the point where we were talking about your involvement with the Chamber.
Yes.
That started when?
I joined the Chamber, I think, in 2012. I was asked to join by Andrew Maddock of Midwest, who at that point was probably the vice chairman or maybe even the chairman.
For those of us who aren't particularly initiated in these matters, what is the Chamber of Trade or Commerce, as it now is known?
Yeah, it's known as both either. Good question. So the chamber exists to promote the town and the businesses within it. So I guess you could say it's a membership organisation of made up of businesses in the town who want to work together to make the town better. So we have about 125 members at the moment. We have a small executive committee made up of, it's currently 11 people. So we kind of run the chamber, I guess. We're all volunteers and we meet usually once a month and we discuss whatever issues are arising, so be that parking, business rates, whatever's happening in the town at the time. We help support events like the Summer Festival. We organise the Festive Shopping Day in December. We try to answer questions for businesses. We try to liaise with the town council, other organisations in the town. So we're kind of a bit of a central point, really. We do what we can to make the town better for the businesses and the people in it. So try and encourage more people into town to use the local businesses. We offer networking events for businesses. So I find sometimes when you run your own business, it can be quite isolated, especially if you've worked in corporate where you're used to having lots of people behind you. So it's quite a good way for me to network and meet other businesses and learn from them, either work with them on projects or ask for expertise in different areas. So when you run your own business, you're never going to be an expert in everything. You might know a few things about some of it. But there's a few bits, like, for example, my HR, I get done by somebody else because I don't have the first clue about HR. So the chamber for me is a good way of meeting other businesses. So if I needed a solicitor or an HR person or a marketing person, I know that I could look through the chamber directory and go, oh, well, there's this person, and I know them, I've got an introduction. The same people come to me and say, do you know someone that does this, that, or the other? And I can say, well, you know, we've got this member that does that. And it's kind of, it doesn't really work on a referral basis, but it just means that you know who else is in the town and what they do. And even at the most recent networking event last month, I met people that I've never met before that work in Sherborne that I just haven't encountered. So it's a way to all kind of work together, really, to make Sherborne as good as it can be.
Networking and practical help.
Yeah, I mean, the high street's hard at the moment. So
I was going to say, what are the major challenges facing retailers in Sherborne at the moment?
Rent and business rates, I would say. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, rents are going up. Where we've had the chains coming in, that pushes the rents up, and that's not necessarily a bad thing because the chains do actually bring people into the town as well, but they can afford higher rents, and the landlords then think, well, I can get a higher rent, so that's what I'll do, and then the rents in turn push up the business rates, so it's a little bit of a vicious circle. But saying that, Sherborne's looking pretty good at the moment. We don't have that many empty shops. There's two or three that have just opened recently, and there's a couple that look like they're just about to open. So compared to a lot of towns, we're doing all right. But it's tough. You know, we've lost a fair few businesses as well. So I guess the aim of the chamber is to promote the businesses that we've got and make sure that people are using it, make sure that people know what's there. There's so many businesses here that maybe aren't on the high street, so they're not visible, but they are here, and you just have to kind of look for them a little bit. So we have a directory of all of our members on the chamber website, and profiles of everybody, so you can have a look and see who they are and see what they do. And I'd really encourage everyone to do that before they go outside Sherborne to get anything done, because there's probably someone here that does it. You just maybe don't know that they're here.
Okay. Time is against us, but you've recently been elected chair of said organisation.
I have.
And, so what's your vision? What do you intend to do over the next... Is it a year or 2 years? Or
it's a year initially. Yeah. Most people do it for two or three years, so hopefully I'll get a reasonable chance at it. I guess my main aim is to bring everybody together a little bit more. So we're aware that we hadn't been doing as many events as we would have liked to recently. We've just done a schedule of events for the next year. So we've tried to put kind of a mixture of networking events. We're going to lay on some training sessions in things like HR, first aid, that kind of thing. We've got a few purely social events. We've got a barbecue coming up on the 19th of July at the Toy Barn, if anyone would like to come. And kind of have more of an agenda of things that we're doing, and make the executive committee more visible so that people know who we are. They can approach us, ask us questions, ask us, you know, how to go about doing certain things in the town, to make the chamber more visible, more approachable. I've had lots of smaller business owners saying, well, you know, I don't think my business is big enough for the chamber. Well, not at all. I'd like to kind of dispel that myth that it's really there for everybody, and that's the whole point. And we do have some bigger members like Waitrose. But we also have loads of one-man bands, one-person bands, and it's really there for everybody. And I'd like to think that there's something we can do to help everybody by getting involved and by organising the events. And you know, there's so, like I said, it's all done by volunteers. All of our time is voluntary, so that can be quite hard when you're running your own business to find stuff. Which, so apologies if you get emails from me at 10 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock in the morning. That's sometimes the only time I have available. But to get everyone more involved and to get a bit more of a buzz around Sherborne and get everyone helping each other and having a bit of fun along the way.
Mm. So the message is, if you're not already in it, come and join us.
Yeah? Exactly. Come and see me.
Okay. We're going to have to end, but just before we do, what does Jane do to relax outside? It doesn't sound like you have much time, obviously, but what do you get up to?
I'm doing a triathlon next weekend. I try and do one every year just because it kind of makes me stay fit through the year. I'm not a very good swimmer or cyclist or runner, as any of you that have seen me struggling around town will know. But I can get round, and ultimately that's my aim this year, is to get round, maybe a bit quicker than I got round last year, but we'll see. Training hasn't gone that well this year for a variety of reasons. But I just think for me, exercising is a way to switch off to everything else, and it's really easy to get totally wrapped up in work and not have any fun. And actually, for me, when I'm training, I can't look at my phone, I can't talk to anybody, so it's just kind of my time to switch off and relax. Although I don't think next Sunday morning is going to be very relaxing, but I'll give it my best shot.
Jane, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
We wish you well with Oliver's.
Thank
and
you.
In the chamber.
Thanks very
much.
We're
going to go out with your final piece, which is Oasis and Champagne Supernova. Another favourite?
Yeah, Oasis were kind of the soundtrack to my last year at school, probably. Oasis and Blur were massive at the time. I was always more of an Oasis girl. I would walk across hot coals to get tickets to an Oasis gig if they ever reformed. The summer I left school, went on holiday, and the only album I had with me was the Oasis album, and this is my favourite song from that album.
Wonderful. It's Oasis and Champagne Supernova. Jane Wood, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Over in the sky, someday you will find me. A champagne supernova, a champagne supernova in the sky. Wake up the dawn and ask her why. A dream, she never dies. Wipe that terror. Faster than